From NPR and WBUR Boston, I'm Meghna Chakrabarty, and this is On Point. It is primary day here in New Hampshire. Yesterday, Democratic candidates were all over the Granite State, drumming up some last-minute support. Here's a journey through a big day on the stump.
The best contrast to Donald Trump is someone like me. The Midwest is not flyover country to me. I'm going to be able to say that to Donald Trump on the debate stage. I live there. The people that he's hurting with his trade war, they are not poker chips in a bankrupt casino to me. They are my friends and my neighbors.
I respect Senator Sanders, but when I hear this message go out that you're either for a revolution or you got to be for the status quo, that's a vision of the country that doesn't have room for most of us. Because we know what has to change. But we also know that we're going to bring about that change by coming together, not by saying, if you don't agree with me 100% of the time, you don't belong at my side. We have to reach out and come together in order to solve these problems.
Bernie Sanders, Pete Buttigieg seem like they are sort of peaking just at the right time. How do you catch them? Or are you not thinking about it like that?
I just really don't think about it that way. I'm out fighting for what I believe in, and I'm just deeply, deeply grateful to have a chance to be in this fight and to have a chance to talk with people who see how their lives could change if we would just take hold of our government, take hold of our democracy, and make it work.
So your job tonight and all day tomorrow is to get your Rolodexes out, whether you're from New Hampshire or out of state. Call everybody you know in New Hampshire. Start with your immediate family. Go to your extended family. Go to your neighbors. Go to your friends. If they're undecided, convince them. That's your job.
Look, folks, 24 hours left. 24 hours left. So thank you. I'm here to ask you. I need your help, and thank you for offering it. Stick with me 24 more hours, and I promise you, we're going to do just fine heading south and across this country. We're going to win this nomination.
And we also have to stand together because you know and I know that real change never takes place from the top on down, always the bottom on up. It's when millions of people stand up. That's the history of the labor movement, That is the history of the civil rights movement, millions of people standing up in the fight against racism. It's the history of the women's movement. It's the history of the gay rights movement. It's the history of the environmental movement. And brothers and sisters, we are making history in this campaign.
It was indeed a big day yesterday in New Hampshire, but the next big turn in the Democratic presidential nomination process is currently in the hands of a couple hundred thousand Granite State voters. Who are they? What do they value? And how are the candidates reaching out to them? What impact could these voters have? So this hour on Point, we're in New Hampshire for the first in the nation primary. And joining us in Manchester, New Hampshire, is Anthony Brooks, On Point's 2020 political correspondent. It's good to see you, Anthony.
Hey, it's great to see you face to face, Megan.
Still standing, you are after.
I am indeed. As Joe Biden said, 24 hours more, and then we can all do something else.
So what do you think the mood is here on primary day, given all that you've seen over the past couple of days with the candidates?
You know, it's so interesting. I think I'm struck by the idea that after this New Hampshire race, the race might just be as muddled as it was a week ago after Iowa. I mean, you know, with progressives consolidating around Bernie Sanders, more moderate Democrats and independents drawn to Buttigieg, but a bunch of them still looking for an alternative. Amy Klobuchar on the rise, Elizabeth Warren determined and with the means to sort of fight on into South Carolina, Nevada, and on to Super Tuesday. So it's a muddled race. And I think what you hear out there, and I think you heard a lot of this too, is a lot of voters still trying to figure out who's the best candidate to beat Trump, even though there are some clear front runners in Bernie Sanders and Pete Buttigieg.
Clearly a lot of undecideds, and the campaign's going after them very hard. But let's spend a little time talking about Senator Bernie Sanders, because I went to a small-ish for Sanders canvassing launch event yesterday. You also have seen a couple of his big rallies. What is the mood amongst his supporters, amongst the campaign?
Well, I mean, there's a lot of excitement. I saw him in Keene on Sunday night, a couple of thousand people. He had 7,500 people at UNH last night. And one of the ways Sanders does this is a lot of his rallies, you know, begin as rock concerts. And they, I mean, literally rock concerts. They have rock bands. They bring in tons of young folks, and there's a lot of excitement. And very much the same thing that I felt back in 2016. His campaign events sort of feel like a movement. And he talks about, you know, voter turnout as being the key. The other night he said that, you know, his goal is to make today the largest voter turnout in New Hampshire primary history. That's his key, to expand the electorate. I don't think he's going to get that, but he looks like he's pretty good. So his rallies just feel like that. Lots of excitement, lots of dedication from lots of young right. voters.
Well, and in order to drive those turnout numbers to the levels that he wants, the Sanders campaign is bussing in folks from out of state to do a lot of canvassing.
Absolutely.
From door to door here in New Hampshire. And we were at a canvassing launch event yesterday. It was behind a mall with a big red dumpster on one side, a sort of rusty awning on another, the obligatory New Hampshire salt pile. Given that it's in the middle of winter here, there are still a couple of hundred people who were wildly enthusiastic for Senator Sanders, and he came out and he talked and he revved up the group, and as you said, it really had this feeling of a movement. So
yep.
So I just want to take a minute or so to listen to one of the voters that we caught up with at this canvassing event. And by the way, most of the folks we saw were from Massachusetts and New York. So
we had
a tough time finding a New Hampshire voter yesterday. But here's Rachel DeAndrea from Mount Vernon, New Hampshire. And she told us that she's voting for Senator Sanders because of his plans on climate change.
I see that you're wearing a pin supporting Senator Sanders. I presume you're going to vote for him tomorrow?
Yes. Definitely.
And why?
I really believe that Senator Sanders is for the people, for the misrepresented, for climate, for nature. I think he's standing for the people.
There are some sort of quote-unquote centrist Democrats who are concerned about Senator Sanders and calling himself a Democratic Socialist. And just what's your response to that?
I just want to go back to my main point that I feel like no matter what his title is, he's democratic. He's for democracy. He's for the people, which is what we need right now.
And what in particular then about Bernie Sanders do you see as being unifying?
I mean, look at this. I mean, I canvassed for his campaign in 2016, and I canvassed the past week, and I've just seen so many diverse kinds of people come together. I've seen people like sharing food, sharing stories. It's a kind of unification that I haven't experienced before, and it's incredible.
Anything else you want to say about Senator Sanders?
Super, super important that one of his top policies has to do with climate change and climate crisis. I feel like it's so important that we have someone who's acknowledging the emergency that we're in right now.
Okay, so actually to that point, what would you tell voters who say that they think that Senator Sanders' plans are like unrealistic, that we can't afford them, they're never going to happen, that it's pie in the sky?
I feel like there's already enough resources and enough attention that if it were put in the right place, it could be utilized correctly.
That's New Hampshire voter Rachel DeAndrea. We caught up with her yesterday at a canvassing launch campaign event for Senator Sanders. Anthony, so in terms of a sense of momentum and a movement, clearly Bernie Sanders is feeling that right now. The other name that pops to mind is Pete Buttigieg.
Yeah, it's really interesting. And in those two candidates and in their followers is this sort of schism right now, this sort of existential quandary that Democrats and a bunch of independents find themselves in. Do you buy the Sanders line that he can create that movement energy, bring in new voters, and essentially sweep across the country and win? Or do you buy Buttigieg's line, which is like, hold on, you know, not everybody wants to sign up for a revolution. I'm offering something that's a lot more moderate. I still want a whole bunch of progressive policies, but, you know, I want what he calls, he wants the Democrats, he wants the independents, he wants liberals, and he wants future former Republicans, sort of a big tent approach and not quite as left, not quite as extreme as Bernie Sanders. So that's where the Democrats are kind of figuring out what to do today.
Well, I want to just play some tape that you gathered from Kevin Gillespie from Amherst, New Hampshire, at a rally for Pete Buttigieg just yesterday. And Anthony, Kevin told you why he's backing Buttigieg over Massachusetts Senator Elizabeth Warren.
Warren is a little too far to the left to bring in those moderate votes. I also think that Buttigieg has a little bit more compassion in how he comes across. I think he listens more closely to people. I don't think he's that anxious to get to the answer, whereas Warren seems like she's so fired up with all of her plans, and I think that is going to alienate some people that Buttigieg could attract.
Anthony, I mean, you've been to some of Buttigieg's rallies. Do you feel that same energy? I mean, is he catching fire with his moderate message here?
I mean, I think it's fair to say that he's been catching fire over the last few weeks. I mean, he's had some really, really big rallies. But it's not the same kind of passion. It's more that you find it at Sanders. I mean, your voter was perfect at the Bernie Sanders rally that you interviewed, because there's passion, there's an explanation, there's an answer for everything. The Buttigieg folks are more like, yeah, I'm not so much that far left, and you know, we got to figure out a way to win and unite. So, you know, this is an incredibly eloquent guy. We think he's our candidate. Not the same kind of on fire passion, but a lot of enthusiasm for him, for sure.
Okay, so how might that translate today, as those very same voters have to actually tick the box when they go to the polls?
I mean, it's a great question. I mean, I think if you believe the polls, this is going to be a really strong result for Sanders. It looks like he's going to come out on top, and Buttigieg is going to be in second place. Either way, he gets a ticket out of New Hampshire and goes on to credibly claim that he is this alternative to Bernie Sanders and to Joe Biden, by the way, who seems to have faded pretty dramatically in recent weeks.
Well, we'll talk about Vice President Biden and the other candidates as they duke it out here in New Hampshire today, where we are in Manchester, New Hampshire, on primary day, the first in the nation primary. There's a lot more to discuss when we come back. This is On Point.
Support for the On Point podcast comes from Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform that lets you find candidates fast. Ditch the busy work and use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/on point. That's Indeed.com/on point. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. We are in Manchester, New Hampshire today on the day of the first in the nation primary being held in the Granite State. And I am joined by Anthony Brooks. He is On Point's 2020 political correspondent. And also joining us now in our Manchester studio is Holly Shulman. She's communications advisor for the New Hampshire Democratic Party, former spokeswoman for the Democratic National Committee. And in 2012, she was President Obama's New Hampshire communications director. Holly, welcome to On Point.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Okay, so how is this primary day shaping up so far, in your view?
So far, so good. When I voted this morning, I know that there had been 190 people there already, and that was 8 a.m. in my precinct. But things are going pretty smoothly so far, and it's an exciting day here.
Okay, and so do you expect some kind of clarity to come out of how New Hampshire deciders vote today? Because we didn't get that from Iowa. Is New Hampshire going to provide that or not?
Well, our elections are very different than how they run them in Iowa. Our Secretary of State runs them. People show up. They're given a ballot. They can mark it in pen or pencil. They give it to someone. It goes in a box, and then it's counted at the end of the night. And
radical idea.
I know. We've been doing it for 100 years, multiple times every year, and actually the Secretary of State has been actually running the process for longer than I've been alive at this point. So
that's a story in and of itself.
Yeah, so he's pretty confident. And said last week that we'll see something by 9:30 p.m. So, yeah.
Well, I mean, Anthony, to that point, I mean, no matter what happens today, given who's in the field and where their relative strengths are nationally, does the outcome in New Hampshire even matter?
Well, I mean, I think it matters. And I think it always matters because there's so much attention right now. So there are a lot of storylines that are going to come out of New Hampshire. So I think they're going to matter. But to your point about clarity, I mean, I think Holly's point about I'm pretty confident that we're going to get a clear vote count at 9:30. But in terms of clarity about where that leaves the Democratic race, no, I don't think that's going to happen. Because in the past, usually you see some winnowing of the field coming out of Iowa and certainly some winnowing of the field that comes out of New Hampshire. And I don't think we're going to see a lot of that because, as we mentioned in the previous segment, Biden is waiting to get into South Carolina and Nevada, where he has support of African Americans. Obviously, Sanders goes on. Buttigieg goes on. Elizabeth Warren, who is desperate for a better showing today in New Hampshire, has the resources to continue on. And her campaign says she will because they think they can sort of fight this war of attrition and to slowly accumulate candidates. And then Super Tuesday comes the billionaire Bloomberg. What's that going to do to the race? I mean, on and on it goes. So clarity after tonight? No, not at all. It's a muddled story.
Okay, so since you mentioned Senator Elizabeth Warren, whose home state is next door to New Hampshire, let's listen to a New Hampshire voter that you talked to, Anthony, just yesterday, Lynn Coakley of Milford. She is supporting Elizabeth Warren.
And worth mentioning that this was at a Pete Buttigieg rally, and she was surrounded by friends who were for Pete Buttigieg, and she said, not me.
Actually, Holly, before we listen to what Lynn told Anthony, we've seen a lot of that over the past few days, that like it's that the crowds aren't necessarily 100 or even 90% for the candidate that they're seeing, that there was quite a heterogeneous mix of supporters there.
Yeah, I mean, the joke is that every Granite Stater has to meet every candidate at least three times before they make up their mind. And so I do think that even though people are leaning towards one candidate or leaning towards another, they might not make up their mind until they're sitting in that vote booth and looking at that ballot.
So that's actually a huge area of conversation, which we'll come back to in just a second. But let's listen to what Lynn Coakley told Anthony yesterday at a Buttigieg event about her support for Senator Warren.
I really have to admire a woman that has a plan for everything. I'm very impressed with the way she's thought through these issues. When I listen to Buttigieg, he says some things I like, but he doesn't have any follow-up. And Elizabeth Warren could sit with you for an hour and tell you exactly why and how she's going to get that done.
So interesting. You know, I had an interesting conversation with her, and she sort of expressed this idea that I'm struck by, too. I mean, Elizabeth Warren's decline, if you will, is somewhat mysterious because she had such a has such a well-organized campaign. She got in early. She, you know, more than a year ago, she's well-organized in a whole bunch of states beyond New Hampshire. And yet here she is really struggling to emerge in her neighboring state. And I think one of the things you can debate about Elizabeth Warren is she's refused to sort of go after her Democratic opponents. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think she's been very sensitive to the fact that she and Bernie Sanders share a lot of the progressive folks, but maybe in hindsight, she should have said, look, here's where I'm different from Bernie Sanders. You know, I'm still embracing his progressive values and his progressive programs, but hey, I'm a former Republican. I'm a devoted capitalist. I'm not a Democratic socialist. You know, and I've gotten things done in Washington, arguably more than Bernie Sanders, but she resisted saying that. And, you know, to her credit, she says she doesn't want to shoot fellow Democrats. That's not her approach.
Interesting. But we have been seeing sniping between Biden, Buttigieg,
Absolutely.
Sanders.
Yep.
But Holly, so let's talk about New Hampshire voters themselves for a second here, because has the electorate in the Granite State been changing over the past several presidential cycles?
Yeah, we've definitely seen new voters come in. And I think one of the key questions today is folks are competing for a certain set of voters that they know have voted before, but we actually have same day registration here. So we have no idea how big this pie is. So anyone can really win it at this point, because even though if you know likely voters are voting for you, who shows up today is totally up in the air.
Mm-hmm. But there's a voter ID law, though, now that's made that a little complicated.
It's a little complicated. Basically, the governor said that if he took college towns out of the equation, that Trump and him would win a landslide every time. He told a conservative radio show this. And so since then, they've tried to implement a bunch of steps. But the reality is, if you're a college student, if you're 18 years old, if you're a U.S. citizen, and if you live in New Hampshire, you can vote today.
Okay.
A lot of confusion around that, though, right, Holly?
Yeah.
I know that there was a lot of confusion in the last sort of month or two about what college students can actually do. And part of that was because of this new law that was signed by
And this was all a deliberate effort by Republicans to confuse confuse people. I mean, we've seen this other places as well. They've really adapted the Republican playbook at other places to kind of suit New Hampshire, right? Knock out young people from the equation. And so I think that they deliberately created a lot of confusion. But what's the real deal? Yeah. So you can go to the polls today. If you're 18, you're a citizen, and you live here. Yeah.
Yeah. And we have what, more than 40% of New Hampshire voters are registered as independents, and they can pull any ballot they want today.
They can, yeah. And so we expect that a lot of them will pull our ballot today. We have a more exciting race, for sure. I mean, not to discount Bill Weld at all. but I think we have a little more excitement on our side. But I think people are also eager to cast two votes against Donald Trump this year, and so this would be their first today.
Mm. So talk about, have there been changes in sort of who suburban New Hampshire voters are, who the rural voters are, and the patterns that they've been showing over the past several cycles?
Yeah, so we've actually seen a UNH study recently that showed that rural voters are becoming more Democratic at a pretty quick pace. Suburban voters are a little harder, but our suburbs here are a little weird, right? Because they're not kind of how you think of Boston suburbs. A lot of them are Boston suburbs. Manchester has a few little suburbs, but, you know, we have some minor cities here, so I wouldn't compare it to what's happening in Philadelphia, what's happening other places in the country. It's just a little confusing how it all works. But the suburban vote is going to be the key, because that's, you know, the so-called suburban vote, which are mostly Boston suburbs, because that's where the population is. And so every election, we're watching those places to see what happens.
So what does that mean then, say, for someone like Senator Sanders, if the suburban vote is less sort of writ large, perhaps less progressive?
Yeah, I mean, there's progressives everywhere in the state. You know, it really just depends on who shows up today. But those are the population centers. So we'll see how it goes.
Okay. Well, yeah. I want to switch gears and talk about another candidate who might be having a little surge here in New Hampshire, Senator Amy Klobuchar. We actually met a supporter of Senator Klobuchar at a Joe Biden event,
of course.
So once again, this is Emily Olson. We met her last night, and she spoke with On Point's producers Anna Bauman and Dori Scheimer about why she is going to be casting her vote for Senator Klobuchar.
Do you have your mind settled on who you might vote for?
I guess so. Yeah, I really like Amy Klobuchar. I just vibe with her a lot. I consider myself to be more liberal, and I know she's more center of the road, but in terms of electability, I feel like we need that. And I would just, this does not influence my vote, but I would love to see a woman in the White House.
How old are you?
I am 25. I just turned 25.
And do you find that there are other people in your age group and your friends who also support Amy Klobuchar?
I think a lot of people, especially in New Hampshire, a lot of people are Bernie supporters. A lot of my old friends, especially going back to 2016, supported Bernie. I did meet a friend the other night who was volunteering for Pete's campaign, but I think it's a pretty even split. Yeah.
I heard you say electability, that you feel like you're more liberal than Amy Klobuchar, but you think that she would appeal to more center-of-the-road voters come November. How big of a decision? We're just hearing that a lot, that it might not be the perfect alignment with your values, but you think it's that important come November.
I understand what you're saying. I mean it in a little bit of a different way. I don't think that an election should be, we have to get this person out of office. That's not what the presidential election is about. For me, it's, yes, what I care about does matter, but I'm thinking of America as like a whole country. And so in terms of she appeals to more people, I feel like that'd be better for America and better represent who we are.
That's Emily Olson, a New Hampshire voter we met last night, again, at a Joe Biden rally, but she is supporting Senator Klobuchar. I mean, Holly, what do you think about that?
I mean, I was impressed with the results out of Hart's location, which is one of these first midnight voting locations. It's one of three, which Klobuchar came in first. And that was, I'm not going to say I'm surprised because it's anyone's game, but it was impressive to kind of go into today with that extra, as people are calling it, clo-mentum, of course.
Yeah, and I think that clo-mentum sort of took root, especially in the wake of her debate performance on Friday evening. It was a very strong debate performance, and she's really sort of emerged as this moderate alternative to Sanders and Buttigieg, and to people who are thinking that Joe Biden, that the air is sort of coming out of his balloon. So, she's got a kind of compelling story to tell from the Midwest. She's capable of winning. She has won in red districts. I saw her in Keene yesterday, and she said, "I've won every race going back to fourth grade." So, and she also showed that she has that she's pretty nimble on her feet. She's good off the cuff and has a sense of humor. So, yeah, there's some excitement for her. She had 1,100 people, which is pretty big by New Hampshire standards, in Nashua earlier this week. So that's one of the really interesting storylines that I think is going to come out today. Because if she finishes, let's say, a solid third, that, again, sort of contributing to this muddle result, that sort of gives her the ticket out of New Hampshire to go on and compete in the states that follow up. Her challenge is she's not well-funded. She's not yet well-known in states like Nevada and South Carolina. So where she goes after here is less clear.
But New Hampshire has shown total fearlessness in voting for women, Holly.
Yes. So we currently have 3 members of our federal delegation are women. We had an all-female delegation right before that. And on both sides, too. Kelly Ayotte, of course. So, yeah, we're not fearful of that. We also have a Senate president who's a woman. I mean, it just goes up and down. You know, we have an elective state legislature of more than 400 people, which might surprise everyone. But that means that there's a really big pipeline for local politics. And it just creates a kind of more equitable political landscape here.
Okay, so we mentioned Clomentum. Let's talk about that fizzling Joementum, okay? Because we were at this Biden rally last night at a Greek Orthodox church in Manchester. And it was remarkable for its lack of energy, Anthony. I have to say, there were a couple of hundred folks there. About a third of the room was the media, anyway. And before Vice President Biden came out, all of his surrogates that were trying to build up the crowd, you know what they were talking about? You take a guess, rather than talking about Joe himself?
Donald Trump.
The president's name did come up, but they were basically like, find a voter. Find an undecided voter. It was all about just give us that last little push. It did not have the energy at all that we felt at the Sanders events.
Yeah, and I think that's typical. I mean, I've been to now a bunch of Biden events in New Hampshire before Iowa. I saw him a bunch in Iowa, and what you're telling me that you saw yesterday is very consistent with his events. There's something that sort of is in opposition to that, though, Meghna, and you were mentioning this before we went on the air, that there isn't that kind of excited energy at Biden events. And that's clearly a problem for him. And that's why I think he hasn't done well in Iowa. And he's predicting that he's not going to do well today in New Hampshire. At the same time, he does well when he's face-to-face with voters. There is that sort of Joe sense of compassion, and it's real, and it impresses people in the moment.
It
did
does.
You saw that, right?
Without a doubt. Yeah. So one thing that you get to see when you do go to these rallies is you see the entire sort of full emotional spectrum that candidates who are especially good on the stump bring. And I'd say Biden is good on the stump. He absolutely started out by connecting with a member of the audience who has been sober from drug addiction for several years and like made her feel like she was the only person in the room. You could have heard a pin drop at that moment. And then, you know, he swung into his let's beat Donald Trump part of his stump speech. He would go back and connect to individuals in the room and then basically begged New Hampshire voters, just give me 24 hours so he could get to South Carolina and Nevada. You know, I was reading, Holly, that there's some folks out there who say it's the wrong Joe Biden who's running. That if he emphasized more sort of the empathetic part of him rather than the beat Donald Trump part, he might be doing better right now.
Yeah, I think this brings up an interesting point, which is, you know, a lot of the national media and observers and people from out of state are watching debate moments or big policy speeches and to figure out how voters are going to vote, when in reality, there's a lot of weird, unique New Hampshire factors that go into this. And one of them is these face-to-face conversations, right? Or it's like that canvasser who trudged through a foot of snow to get to your door. And you're like, well, if that person supports that person that much, then I'm going to support them that much. Or it's my state rep and who they're supporting and talking to. So there's just all these other unknowns go into the equation.
Holly, it's a great point. And it brings to mind an encounter I had with a voter when Joe Biden, a couple of months back, officially registered for the New Hampshire primary. And I found a voter right outside the state house in the Capitol. And I said, are you voting for Biden? And he said, absolutely. And the reason I am is I have terminal cancer.
Mm-hmm.
And I met Joe a couple of weeks ago. He put his arms around me. And a week later, he followed up and he wanted to know how I was doing. You know, and it's those kinds of interactions that happen in this, you know, for all of the criticism and, you know, justified in my view that New Hampshire gets for not reflecting much of the country. Those interactions are sort of what make this whole primary election experience kind of fascinating to watch.
It is remarkable how common that is, too, yeah. Because standing in the slush for a Sanders event, we ran into a woman who had almost an identical story, Anthony. Yeah. She said that she had met Joe Biden and that he put his arm around her in a way that she was totally fine with, yeah. And and said that, you know, her sister's dying of cancer, yeah. and he told his staff to take her name so that they could do something about it.
No,
so
I think that's legit. That's real Joe, yeah, right there.
Which may be something that's possible in a place like New Hampshire, but when you're taking that across the country, it doesn't connect as much, perhaps. Well, we've still got more candidates to talk about and more analysis on what's happening today on primary day in New Hampshire. So we'll be back. This is On Point. This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. We are in Manchester, New Hampshire today because it is primary day, the first of the nation primary in the Granite State. And I'm joined by Anthony Brooks. He is On Point's 2020 political correspondent. And Holly Shulman also joins us. She's communications advisor for the New Hampshire Democratic Party, former DNC spokeswoman as well. And in 2012, she was President Obama's New Hampshire communications director. I want to talk with both of you for a minute about turnout, because as we heard, one of the stories that came out of Iowa and the caucuses there was a lower than desired turnout amongst Iowa Democrats here. Just recently, just a couple of days ago, the Secretary of State of New Hampshire sort of downgraded his expected turnout numbers here in New Hampshire, Holly. I mean, is that significant?
I mean, 2008 was historic, and so everyone's trying to compare this to then, but there was a unique mix of factors. There were historic candidates taking the field. There was a very short time period between the Iowa caucus and now. I think it was only 4 or 5 days in there, and so that kind of created like this closeness of these races. So I don't think we're going to see anything like that, but voters are going to turn out today, and I think the most telling part will be how many undeclared voters choose to vote in our primary and whether at the end of the day we have beat Republicans' voter registration edge in the state. When you choose a Democratic ballot, you automatically become a Democrat. When you leave, you can change your registration back.
You have to affirmatively change it back,
yes,
though?
And so we're hoping people stick with us, and I think that that will be one of these telling metrics of what's going to happen in November.
Okay, that's an optimistic view here, because we've been talking to Democratic analysts who are concerned that this actually could be a bellwether for lower than desired enthusiasm in November. Mm. I mean, if Bernie Sanders is talking about how he's going to win based on turnout.
Yeah, and Bernie Sanders is making, yeah, he wants the largest turnout in New Hampshire primary history. I don't think he's going to get that. And he wanted that in Iowa, and he admits on the stump as recently as a couple of days ago that he was a little bit disappointed in Iowa in the turnout. But he also makes the point that youth turnout was very, very high. And so it'll be interesting to see, and I don't know if you have any thoughts about that, Holly, but just in terms of how the breakdown in turnout mm-hmm. between, I don't know, older folks and super young voters.
Yeah, I mean, I don't have any numbers yet coming in, but obviously young people here are pretty engaged in the election process. We hope that they'll turn out today. We also still, no matter what happens, have one of the most, like the highest turnout rates in the entire country when it comes to primary elections. So, you know, we're still pretty unique that way. So we'll have to see what happens a little later in the day.
Well, okay. Interesting to me to see that some of the biggest campaign events, and you see this sort of cycle after cycle occur at these universities. I mean, they're not, that doesn't mm-hmm. mean they're all university students, but that's where Democrats go to really get their numbers to go up. I mean, the trick, of course, is are they going to show up on election day?
Yeah. And we're lucky with the same day voter registration. I think that that definitely helps. But, you know, people will make up their own minds about whether they're going to the polls, and we hope that they'll join us there today.
Right. So on this issue of turnout and voter enthusiasm, I actually want to play a couple of minutes of a conversation that we had yesterday in Nashua with three people who happen to be supporters of Representative Tulsi Gabbard. Mm-hmm. I mean, Anthony, as you pointed out on the show before, Representative Gabbard basically moved to New Hampshire.
Yeah, she's basically been, she's put all her eggs in the New Hampshire basket. And, you know, she got an insulated surfing suit and even went surfing out in the Atlantic in the middle of, you know, just a few weeks ago. So.
A little cooler than the waters in Hawaii.
But, a little bit.
But so we ran into three people who are supporting her. Two of them actually flew in from out of state, from California and Canada, respectively. So first you're going to hear Chris Smith, who's from Los Angeles, then Jonathan Vail, who's from Nashua, New Hampshire, and then Tomas Bribiesco, who's originally from Iowa.
She's my candidate because I think she has the strength and integrity that we need to bring our troops home and start ending these endless regime change wars. Sometimes we lose track of how long they've been deployed. The ones in Afghanistan have been there almost 20 years now. We have them still in Iraq. It's time to bring them home.
And you're not hearing that from any of the other candidates?
Mostly other candidates. I feel like I'm hearing what they want me to hear. I'm not hearing, okay, let's change this policy to move forward in a better way.
And so you haven't heard that from, say, the other veteran in the race, from Pete Buttigieg?
No, I don't see that as believable. In fact, he said other things. Like, he supports the war in Syria. He said something about sending troops to Mexico to invade Mexico for drug cartels. That's not an anti-war candidate.
So we went to Iowa, South Carolina, and one of the things the Democrats in those states were, like, obsessed with is who they thought could beat President Trump in November. And do you think that Representative Gabbard is that person?
I think she's the only candidate that's going to have Trump voters vote for her. Because I've seen so many Republicans showing up at her events that I've attended. I've been to about a dozen events, and there's usually at least 20%, 30% are Republicans or describe themselves as Republicans. So I think she's the only one that may get any Republicans to vote for her.
I would just say on the question of who can beat Trump, what I'm seeing here, what I saw in Iowa and stuff is that the amount of independents and those who would lean Republican, they voted for Obama, then they moved to Trump because things didn't happen that they wanted to happen. Now they're going to move from Trump to somebody, but they will not vote for other Democratic candidates like Biden and others.
If it turns out that Representative Gabbard doesn't become the nominee, would you still support whoever, in that case, is the Democratic nominee?
I think we all want to defeat Trump. There's no doubt of that. And everybody has different theories on who's the most electable. But
it depends on who is. So, for instance, I would probably support Bernie. I supported him in the last campaign. I'm not feeling the burn this time, but maybe enough to vote for him.
That's Jonathan Vail of Nashua, New Hampshire, and out-of-staters Tomas Bribiesco and Chris Smith. We met them at a burrito bar in Nashua yesterday. Now there doesn't seem to be any polling that indicates that Representative Gabbard's going to get a big boost out of New Hampshire, no matter how much effort she's put into this state. But the reason why I wanted to play that for both of you is, I mean, let's be honest, the media tends to gravitate around the folks who are, like, really enthusiastic for their candidates. They make for great television and great radio. But the national conversation doesn't often enough involve voters like we just heard from Jonathan, Chris, and Tomas. And it's their sort of lukewarm enthusiasm at the end of that conversation, which I wanted to ask you about, Holly. I mean, isn't that of concern for Democrats?
I mean, there's a long time between now and November, and obviously we're going to be reaching out to everyone to try to bring them back into the fold, make sure that they're voting against Donald Trump, no matter who our nominee is. I will say that compare this to 16 or 2008, this election has been not as divisive for our party here as in previous times when there was two teams, when people were going at each other the whole time. And part of that is because these candidates know that everyone is someone's second choice, right? So, you know, they could ultimately get a voter that they didn't want to insult for supporting a different candidate. And so I think we've kept things together pretty well. But obviously that's our focus between now and November, is bringing these people back and make sure they don't just vote against Donald Trump, but that they vote against Chris Sununu, our Republican governor. They vote for Jeanne Shaheen for Senate, right? And keeping them voting for Democrats up and down the ballot.
Okay, so Anthony, I'm going to get you in a second, but I'm just going to push you a little bit,
no,
Ollie,
it's fine.
Here, because
go for it.
You know, I get it as a spokesperson and member of the Democratic Party. You're saying that that's got to be the focus for November, but when we're hearing someone who last time around, Jonathan Vail, who said he was really excited about Senator Sanders this year, he's not even feeling the burn. It does make me wonder if we're going to have close races in key states in November. You need every last voter to show up.
Yeah,
I mean, isn't there a concern that already there seems to be not that fire amongst probably what is not a. Not a insignificant number of potential Democratic voters?
I mean, once we have a nominee, well, this race will clarify itself, right? You'll have Trump on one side, who's broken every promise to everyone here, who's made personal promises to Grant Staters that he betrayed. And you'll have a Democratic nominee who has plans to make life better for people in the state. And I think that will play out more than anyone would want, because we'll see it on our 24-hour news cycles between now and November. And so these folks have plenty of time to think about what they're going to do in the main election and in the general election and hopefully come and stay with us.
Yeah, I mean, that sounds right to me. I mean, we forget, I think, sometimes covering these stories so breathlessly and looking for those key moments in debates, you know, on a Friday evening in February and in February. I want to say, what city are we in?
You are forgiven, Anthony.
In Manchester, you know, the election is 8 months away. There's going to be a whole bunch of primaries out in the future that are going to start to clarify things that I think are going to engage more voters. That's the other thing. You know, we forget that for a lot of folks out there, they're just sort of tuning into this, really. I mean, I know New Hampshire voters do a great job of sort of staying focused for months on these candidates that that come through the state. But people are just sort of tuning into this. The average person is just sort of tuning into this. And we've got a long road to go. And then, of course, we've got the conventions in the summer. So I think it's too soon to really say that, you know, that enthusiasm isn't there. If it isn't there, it's a problem for Democrats. But I think it's too soon to sort of make that judgment.
Okay, too soon, but we actually have a lot of voting activity going on well outside of New Hampshire, okay?
Yep.
So here's the thing. We've been wrestling with these numbers for a couple of days because they're absolutely fascinating. We have roughly, there was the 420,000 total expected turnout here in New Hampshire. About how many Democrats might that mean? 290-ish thousand?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. So in California this past week, 5 million voters received ballots for early voting.
Mm-hmm.
At least 5 million. Okay. Now, in Irvine, the whole population of just Irvine, California is as many people as we have Democratic voters here in New Hampshire. So, Holly, you know where I'm going with this. Make the case for New Hampshire. Why does New Hampshire matter when there actually is quite a bit of electoral activity going on in a lot of other places?
Yeah, I mean, I think we uniquely test the candidates in unique ways. I mean, that's the reality. Is I went to my farmer's market a few weeks ago, and had I walked up to the two presidential candidates who were just walking around the market, I could have asked them anything I wanted and impressed our issues upon them. And that's a little bit of a different way of campaigning than you do in California or larger states, where the media market and TV is how voters get their information primarily. And so it's a difference in the playing field. You know, you can be a not well-funded candidate, come in here, make inroads, talk to people. People get to like you. But when you're talking about big states, you need to have money. And so we like to think that we really level the playing field for candidates and test them in different ways, and they'll be tested other places.
So, yeah.
I'm giving you the look, Anthony.
All right. So I'll ask the question. I mean, you know, this is a perennial issue that came up, and it's come up in the wake of Iowa again and again and again. And I take your point. And I sort of, as a journalist, I've got to say, I love covering presidential politics in New Hampshire for exactly that reason. But there's this issue. This state does not reflect the diversity of the country at large. So what do we do with that? I mean, what's the answer to that?
Yeah. I mean, I think we've been seeing a few things here. You know, when people talk about the demographics issue, which I think you're all alluding to. You know,
not alluding, we're directly
referencing. No one said the D word. But, you know, I think that you know, one of the things that we've seen is that the polls here are very closely tracking polls and other have been tracking national polls very closely, have been tracking polls in other states pretty closely. The other thing is that we're four early states, and New Hampshire, especially our Democrats here, fought very hard to have Nevada and South Carolina included in these four. And so we've been talking about, you know, that this isn't the deciding factor in this race, that Iowa wasn't the deciding factor in the race for a variety of reasons. I think that all the candidates are expected to go on to these other states, and we have two more early states before those have concluded.
Well, and we know that some of the candidates are already turning their attention to Nevada, for example. Elizabeth Warren doing interviews, drive time interviews for Nevada radio.
Oh, they all are. I mean, I've already received notices from the Sanders campaign about his appearances in Nevada. I mean, you know, their travel plans are set. They're on the first plane out of here tomorrow morning.
Bernie Sanders talked quite extensively about his ground game going on right now in California.
Right.
Yesterday when we caught up with him. But Anthony, make the case, though. Nevertheless, New Hampshire, a lot of attention is paid to what's happening here today. So New Hampshire, it does serve a purpose. It is important for a very particular set of reasons.
Well, it's important for a particular set of reasons because the chief among them, it comes first or it follows Iowa. So it's the first primary. So it gets a lot of attention. But we should also note that candidates cannot win New Hampshire and go on and become president. I mean, Bill Clinton did it in 1992, right? I mean, he spun it as a victory because his campaign had been in crisis. Then he came in second to Paul Tsongas, who was a neighbor from Massachusetts. But I don't think he didn't win a primary until four, five, or six primaries down the road. So, you know, this idea that everything is going to be determined by what happens in New Hampshire, I think in this sort of moment of excitement and looking for clarity and waiting for the results and all of the storylines that we've been following for the last several weeks here in New Hampshire, you know, it doesn't mean that New Hampshire sort of has this, you know, absolute determination of who's going to be the next president or the nominees.
Holly, would you agree with that?
I mean, I think that's right. I mean, I think it's anyone's game today. Obviously, the person who does well here will get a boost, both fundraising and otherwise. They'll have some momentum going into the next state. But, you know, we have two more early states left. Other voters get to decide. And we'll see what happens.
Okay. So we've got about a minute left here, and I just want to see if we can touch on one candidate that we haven't mentioned who, in a way, is kind of looming over a lot of this. Michael Bloomberg. Mm-hmm. Well, what do you think?
I mean, he's on the ballot here, number one. But we saw some write-in votes for him overnight in Dixville. So I think it'll be interesting. He is trying to play this game where he has the most money. He can just be on TV. He can kind of reach voters in different ways. But he hasn't made himself accessible like these other candidates. And that's going to be a real question about whether he's really ready for that national campaign without having done that here.
Yeah, huge question. No candidate has ever done this. I mean, basically given up on Iowa, New Hampshire, Nevada, South Carolina, and just put all of their eggs and all of those billions into Super Tuesday. It'll be fascinating to watch.
And we will also mention that Andrew Yang has been spending a lot of time in New Hampshire. Tom Steyer is buying a lot of ads as well. So tons of activity in the Granite State all coming to a head today in the first in the nation primary. So Holly Shulman, communications advisor for the New Hampshire Democratic Party, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
And Anthony Brooks, On Point's 2020 political correspondent. Anthony, it was great to see you across the table.
Hey,
thank you.
This was fun. Thanks.
I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is On Point.